Hello.
Yeah.
Can you hear me? Yeah.
Yeah,
You
kick it
can
off.
all hear me. Yeah. Oh, good. 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 No, it's a great privilege to be here. And actually, the book does exist. Summer Break does exist as a book. So I'm going to take this opportunity to read from that book, if that's okay.
Done.
It really took shape because I had a long-term relationship that came aground during COVID, and I'd lived abroad in Belgium for a long time, and I wrote these poems when we came back to Northumberland. It was like this great homecoming. So I was full of these love poems. So I wrote those, and then COVID came along, and we did quite well with COVID, and then eventually it put just an intolerable strain on our relationship. So I wrote this poem. So summer is obviously the heaven aspect. The little slash is the sort of purgatory limbo aspect, and break is obviously the break up the hell aspect. So I'm just going to read a smattering from all of them, if that's okay. I'll read it in chronological order as well. Well, the first poem is called Out of the Blue. She left me at the height of nesting season, birds building while I was dismantling my home. She left me as brambles we'd planted were fruiting, their berries tart like the metal of front door keys. She left me, and I walked down the garden path for the last time, confettied with blossom. The petals like plectrums, as if one day I might learn to make music from all this. So now we're going into the summer section. That was the prelude poem. So the first poem is Coping Stones. Coping Stones. I use a lot of architectural terminology in my poems, but the coping stones are, I hope I'm not patronizing anybody, but they're the ones that cap walls off, those nice stones that you put on the top of walls. Coping stones. All around the edge of the estate, hand-hewn 18th century masonry, capping tall sandstone walls. I remember seeing the foundations and crypt of a medieval church built from rubble of a Roman temple. So it stands to reason that should these high walls fall, we could salvage the top stonework to make a home where we would weather it all out. Nothing could get to us in our house of coping stones. And the next poem, incidentally, also has an architectural term. I think the proper term for it is called a Patras plate. It's when you have an old building that's about to fall down and you put a big steel beam going through it. And quite often you can tell a building that's been sort of supported because it's got this sort of S shape, sort of like a metal plate. So this is called Anchor. We had a time cutting your hair in lockdown. Russet curls all over the patio, left them for the birds and their nests. But it struck me that they all spelled the initial of your name, S for Steph. How you sometimes see that shape on the side of old buildings, a wall anchor securing a steel beam that gives a spine to a weak edifice. And how you, in your way, go through my life doing the same. I know that the late Kieran Carson was a huge fountain pen collector, and I also collect fountain pens and I like to use them. And this is a love poem about fountain pens. La Mer Blanche. Made in England, the Blackbird fountain pen was also exported to Belgium as Le Mille Blanc, White Blackbird. The one I write with was your grandfather's, a gift for his first Holy Communion, and then for me, 7 decades later. Silenced by the war, its bladder burst, holding in unwritten secrets. Repaired, it writes in English instead. We are the produce of one nation packaged for another. And unlike the politics of our time, this pen's gold beak of a nib has such a beautiful flex to it. This is pretty much the first poem that I ever wrote, which was after somebody. It's quite closely based on a poem by Donald Hall. Not plagiaristically close, I hope, but this poem's called Circadian Rhythms. Most diaries would have had it blank that day. We woke late. You fed the cat. I the birds. Then we made breakfast together. You had a shower. I had my bath. We read. We worked from home. We went for a walk to see a new fish pass on the river. You cooked lunch and I did dinner. You spoke Flemish online with family and I stuck to English on the phone with my mother. The cat sat on each of our laps. We went to bed together, both asleep within minutes. It was one of the best days of my life. I love trees. I'm not quite a tree hugger, but I do love them. So this is a little bit of a tribute to a poem. This is a tribute to a cedar of Lebanon tree, which has been growing nearby where I live for a very long time. Cedar of Lebanon. We walk all the way uphill through Wooler to get to a giant Lebanese cedar. I could be a pilgrim if it's a journey to a special tree and nothing else. You recall the great groves in Lebanon as we stand underneath its huge prickly umbrella, gathering cones hard as green grenades that we take away to try and grow elsewhere, to be thrown into the future and explode in mushroom clouds of resinous canopies. And I could be a soldier if it only involved this task and nothing else. So there endeth the love section. So I'll just read a couple of poems from the sort of intermediary section. That's okay. This first one is called No Fellow Travellers, and it has an epigraph by C.S. Lewis, which is, those who are going nowhere can have no fellow travellers. One of the great accusations levelled at me when I started writing and I went to a creative writing club was, oh, here comes Richie again. He's got another poem about being in a graveyard. And this is, luckily, this is the only poem about being in a graveyard in this collection. But here we go, No Fellow Travellers. On our way back from the beach, we stop at the village graveyard and find people we knew, whom we didn't think were dead. And we've still not got a good word for any of them. The stones face each other in rows in booth-style compartments in old trains. Most of these people lived half a mile from here, and now they couldn't be further away. But they're all arranged as if they're just trying to get home, and the train's waiting on a signal. I walk between them, an inspector in the aisles, who has realized all of his passengers are riding with expired tickets, but is too scared to call them all out. I sometimes think that I've had a midlife crisis a bit too early, so this poem's sort of from that. This poem's called The Folk. When the invitation to a high school reunion came to my door, I was on my knees in the garden of our cul-de-sac home. I was clearing a clogged gutter of dead leaves and found the best tool for the job was a sharp-pronged Georgian cutlery fork with a tapered deer antler handle. I briefly thought of going and then considered the shame of having to account for what I'd not become after showing such promise. When the Georgians made the fork long ago, I imagine they never expected it would end up here in my hand. Before them, it was the deer that never expected to be whittled to this hilt. And actually, on the topic of deer, I'll go into the final section, which is the break section. This is the first poem, and it's called The Stag. Takes time to keep things amicable. We go on long country walks we once did hand in hand, and walk for miles together, a meter apart. So soaked in our own pain, we barely notice a fallow deer stag grazing on nettles beside us. He looks in lofty pity and carries on with his stinging repast. We never married. I never was the stag. But this one's a saint for distracting us briefly this awful day we walked to discuss the killing of a love that, had it been a deer, would have easily been a 16-pointer. I'm sure that the listeners of Ovale will know much better than I do. I mean, my family name, McCaffrey, is obviously Irish. And I was once in the presence of a great Gaelic, not Gaelic, but Gaelic poet called Roddy Gorman. And he said, "What's your surname?" And I said, "McCaffrey." And he said, "Oh, that's Gaelic for," and I'm sure everybody will correct me now, but it's Gaelic for the son of the jockey. So I don't know if that's true, but I wrote a poem around it anyway. So this is called The Jockey. A Scottish poet once told me my surname, McCaffrey, is a Gaelic patronymic, or a Gaelic patronymic, meaning the son of the jockey. As a youngster, I was good at riding ponies and steeds, though I never really much cared for the creatures. You really loved horses, but sadly, they didn't love you back, kicking and throwing you off, breaking your leg and coccyx. In the months after you left, I imagine you as one trying to get back in shape after a long winter, losing whatever weight you gained to get fit for the race ahead, even if that weight might be me, the son of the jockey. I'll read. I had problems with them. When I was a teenager, I had an eating disorder. And it's a really only something that's resurfaced quite recently. So I got this poem, which is about the breakup, but it's, I apologize that it's not exactly an uplifting experience, but this is about the breakup, but also that feeding into it. So this poem is called Bad Fit. All my life, my body's been an enemy, wearing clothes too tight to halt any gain, suits unsuitable and shirts stifling me. Just before you left me for good, I noticed the Orcadian silver band you put on my finger over a decade ago had kept that digit thinner than the right-hand one. the skin underneath, incorrupt as a relic. It's been off 2 months now and no longer fits at all. I'm reminded of the lime tree I planted in an old Belfast sink, the roots eventually fumbling escape through the plug hole, riveting the sink to earth at first, then breaking it in two. I'll just read two more. If I have the time, please tell me if I'm running out. This is a nice sort of Scottish word, but it also exists in Northumberland. Blaweary or Blaweary. Well, the explanation's in the poem. Blaweary. It means tired of the wind. The name of the derelict farm on the moors built into the ruins of a Bronze Age burial cairn. We walked to it for the first time in 2020. I've not been back since. Remember the claggy tracks covered in the hoof prints of sheep, like the thumb marks of potters making a bowl for us to save the memory of this day, should the wind try to blow it all away. And I'll finally end with the outro poem. I got the idea of having a prelude and a coda poem from reading the poetry collections of Michael Longley. There's usually like a poem in italics at the start and at the end, and I think it's a really nice way to ease people in and out of collections. So this is my outro poem. It's called Sermon. In the churchyard, the Red Admiral lands on the wall where I'm sitting. It perches with wings closed in a namaste. The wind keeps prizing it open, like pages in a book before the spine's broken. The stained glass of those wings takes me into the church, where a Bible with its hinges cracked is spread-eagled on a lectern at the same old passage. My father attends service here. I asked him what the sermon he just sat through was all about. He'd already forgotten, his brow in a furrow until it came back to him. It was about joy. So thank you very much. Thank you for listening to me.